Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, Monday, October 24th. We'll recap what we saw over the week for a glorious NFL Week 7. Of course, I use the term glorious to be a bit facetious, given how Sunday Night Football went with our first tie in quite some time, and more importantly, one without touchdowns. But the name of the game is cashing tickets, and we did that yet again on Bet the Board podcast on Thursday. And we'll get to it in just a matter of seconds, but I want to welcome in my co-host, Payne Insider. Payne, we had a little bit of confusion about the game that we liked, the game that we officially endorsed as worthy of an investment this past weekend.
Well, I think the one they thought we endorsed won as well. But listen, we're not naive here. We know you guys are busy. You want the answers to the test, and I'm sure, you know, there's some of our listeners that, you know, just fast forward to the end for, you know, the air quote free pick. But you told everyone that actually listened we'd be providing information on game day, and then I got drilled with questions. And so, again, I know you want the answers to the test, but you at least have to work a little bit for them. Click a link, take 30 minutes out of your, I think it's 168-hour week. And, you know, when you were in school and kind of cheated on the test, you at least spent time making the cheat sheet. You spent time disguising it. You practiced how you were going to hide it. And if you were going to cheat off the Asian girl in statistics right next to you, you at least schmoozed her a little bit, maybe took her out on Friday night, let her hang out with the cool kids, and then she let you cheat. So regardless, there's some kind of work involved here, and all that we ask is you click a link and listen.
Yeah, it's all about positioning yourself and being able to do the due diligence. We told you where to look. We told you where that answer on the answer key was going to be. And we love all the guys and girls that listen. The questions you guys send are absolutely phenomenal. And we do this podcast for you guys. But as Payne said, work with us a bit. When we tell you there'll be a game on Sunday, there's only one spot. We've ended up posting things on the Bet the Board podcast website. So the links are all clickable. Hopefully, folks were able to go over there, spend the 2 minutes, check it out, because you're not going to get a first half under 21.5, Payne. That's going to cash a lot easier than what we saw Sunday night. But as you mentioned, everything else we talked about on the podcast, from the Dolphins to the Chargers over, all seemed to get you to the window either way.
Yeah, it was a very good Sunday, thank God, because Saturdays, oof. The UCF Knights may put me into a tailspin, but thank God everything is right on Sundays with the NFL.
Well, it is funny because people always ask, well, have you guys thought about doing a college football podcast to expand Bet the Board? And it has been discussed and thrown about, no formalized plans made in any sense of the word. But we'll tell you one thing. We tell you when we win and we tell you when we lose. Payne, college has not exactly been the strength for you and I over the last couple seasons.
Well, it certainly hasn't. I mean, 3 years ago, it was the easiest sport to pick. We're just taking money line dogs. They're winning outright. It was one of the most ridiculous seasons. But since then, there's been a market shift. There's been a lot of bad beats. I will say this. I never, ever claim bad beat, but there are some that are tougher than others. And when you have UCF last week -3, close 4.5, and then lose, you know, after leading 25-7, that one was a tough one to handle, especially how it ended when Temple goes 32 seconds, no timeout, 70 yards. And then this week with the first half under, oof, that was tough. And you thought that was the end of it. And then you have the FIU total under 34.5 first half, and two touchdowns in 50 seconds derail your easy win there. It was a tough Saturday.
Whatever doesn't kill you in this business makes you stronger, and we'll get into bad beats. Have a small anecdote on my side regarding the way the Cardinals and Seahawks game ended last night. One that didn't necessarily impact me, but it did one young bettor out there who thought he was walking to the window with a nice payday. Wasn't quite the case when Chandler Cannizzaro bangs it off the upright, but we will get there. Of course, the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online. And we always bring on, you know, our lead guest from Bet Online at Dave Mason. You can follow him on Twitter throughout the course of the week. All sorts of great analysis at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well at Todd Furman. And of course, the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Thanks to everybody. We've pushed that over 2,000 followers, continue to grow some of the best information. We like to have quite a bit of fun over there with GIFs. Gambling should be fun. I mean, that's the name of the business. We, of course, do this as a profession, but a lot of you listeners out there are doing this to keep your Sundays a little bit more entertaining. And Payne can't really argue because the product we've seen on the field has been nothing short of catastrophic. When you look at some of the quarterback play, some of these results, it's not enjoyable to watch a lot of these games week in, week out.
I'm an NFL fan, and I know Sunday night I looked at Twitter and everyone was like, this is the reason ratings are down. For me, I enjoy defensive battles. I'm an old school guy. But to me, it's much more entertaining when every single play matters. When a 3-yard run to get you ahead of the chains on first down happens, you're not taking a sack, you pin the other team back with a great punt, and it's all about field position. Every single play matters. And I'll be honest with you, Saturday night I end watching Oklahoma-Texas Tech. I don't even have fun watching that game. It's just so ridiculous. It's a glorified game of flag football. Nobody can do anything in terms of, a decent stop, something that, doesn't have the other team going up and down the field. Like, it's not fun to watch that for me.
And I would agree with you. And I think we've seen that take place in the Major League Baseball playoffs as well. All the moves, the maneuvering that go in to winning a tightly contested game. And while people want to try and rip apart, and we may as well start there with Arizona, Seattle. I have some other things I want to get to as well. People want to rip that game apart. Those are two elite defenses making life difficult for the offenses. We saw Seattle struggle on the offensive line. Arizona, they could have won that game 37 times. Bruce Arians comes out, and his credit, he calls out his kicker. You're paid to do a job. It's one thing if you're missing a 50-yarder. It's another thing if you're missing a chip shot. Payne, coming into last night's games, you had 4 missed field goals across the NFL that were missed from 29 yards and in. And then you watch Canizero struggle. You watch Hauschka. Now, why these coaches lean on kickers? It's the NFL. You should be able to get out there and make a chip shot field goal. It's not like college where I'll never understand why you play for a field goal unless you have an elite level guy. But to watch a game like that, you're seeing two of the better teams in the NFL. So I have no problem with that. My issue that I have takes place when you watch a game like the Raiders and Jaguars and you see a top pick, and we've ripped him apart a number of times in this podcast, and it's not going to stop, where Blake Bortles just doesn't seem to get it as an NFL starting quarterback.
Yeah, when it comes to Arians, though, I think he was right, and you saw that lack of confidence he had in his kicker, whether it was right before the half trying to sneak in another play, gain a couple extra yards, or it's late in overtime where most teams would have just kicked it, but he tried to feed David Johnson, thought he crossed the goal line there on that plunge, but got held back. The problem, though, again, is be a little bit organized. Don't get the 5-yard penalty for delay of game, pushing your kicker back. And he just doesn't have a lot of confidence in Canizero. It would be interesting to see if Canizero still has a job at this point. He's cost Arizona 2 games now. So that's going to be something to evaluate. When it comes to Blake Bortles, though, I have no words for him.
Do you have any idea why they didn't review the David Johnson potential touchdown there? I mean, I wasn't watching with audio at the time. I was doing 100 things trying to condense some of my notes for the podcast and go through postmortem like I do every Sunday. Did they give an explanation why they didn't review that potential touchdown?
I was sitting there in shock and awe. I didn't really watch the game with the volume either. I try not to be influenced by what the announcers have to say. Sometimes it's a lot of negative stuff in terms of what your brain should be comprehending when it comes to betting on sports. So I try not to be influenced, but I have no idea. I thought every single play in overtime was supposed to be reviewed if it was close or controversial, and that one clearly should have been reviewed.
Yeah, that was my take, and I'm not sure it was if it was actually a touchdown, but either way, take the few minutes, get the call right, and try and sort out this mess. I guess bigger picture, when we talk about the Seahawks and Cardinals, what are the main takeaways that we should get from a game like that? Seattle goes on the road to take on the Saints this week, and a game that we'll probably talk about in a lot more detail on Thursday. And of course, Arizona has a major revenge game across the country against Carolina. But do the Cardinals get up off the deck? I know a tie isn't the end of the world. It is for folks like ourselves that went over 9.5 wins for them. But what's the outlook look like for Arizona going forward?
The defense has been awesome, and that was partly why we liked that under. You got the prime time value with an inflated number, and you featured 2 defenses ranked in the top 3 in efficiency. So that was one benefit. The defense has been much, much better. There's an identity shift going on offense. Arians has smartly changed his approach, not chucking it deep down the field every single time, getting David Johnson, the bell cow, involved. They're getting the ground game going. Carson Palmer was battling the hamstring a little bit, but he was pretty efficient. Michael Floyd, good freaking God, what is going on with that guy? They need him to produce. We love Fitzgerald, but at this stage in his career, not much more than a possession guy. John Brown being out with the sickle cell really hurts that offense if Floyd isn't going to be that deep threat. We saw Nelson emerge late in that game. Maybe he gains some confidence, becomes that deep threat. But offensively, it appears the Arizona Cardinals are going to need to improve just a touch.
And when we look at Seattle, can they shore up the offensive line? I feel like we have these discussions regarding the Seahawks every year, that it takes them until early November, the middle of the month, to really figure out their identity. But that may have been the worst that I've seen the offensive line look. And of course, it's probably not fair to use the Arizona defense as a litmus test for Seattle, but those are the kind of teams they're going to encounter if they're going to get back to the big game.
Yeah, and you know, they've kind of designed it this way. And with that offensive line, there's some issues there. They're not spending money on that side of the ball. They're not spending money on that specific position. When you eventually had to pay Russell Wilson this money, it was going to come at the expense of other positions on that team. You know, when you're paying him less than $1 million a year and he's on the rookie contract, you can splurge. You can have depth. Now they're a little bit thin, especially on the offensive line. And it's become exacerbated simply because Russell Wilson right now is not playing at 100%. That knee, that ankle, I mean, he looks like he's like, you know, a goalie out there with the padding on his knee, with the padding on his ankle. He wasn't really mobile this week, and it becomes a much bigger issue when your offensive line isn't protecting you.
Yeah, I mean, you could see a couple of opportunities he had to take off from the pocket, take advantage of the zone read. Clearly that this team can't run the offense nearly as effectively without him being at 100%. Another interesting game, Payne. 8 turnovers, though, in Philadelphia between the Vikings and Eagles. We talked about this game on Thursday, how the number had gone from Philadelphia -1 on a look-ahead price to the Vikings closing 3-point favorites. Plenty of sharp money there came in on the under, and that seemed to be easy both first half and full game. Minnesota's offense finally showed some vulnerability. I don't think everything is right with Carson Wentz and that Eagles offense, but I will say one thing. Jim Schwartz and company, they came to play. It was a real lunch pail game for them, for the Eagles stop unit, after a disappointing effort the week before against the Redskins.
We've raved about the ball security of Minnesota's offense and, you know, specifically Sam Bradford. They went 318 consecutive snaps without turning it over. They had 2 halfway through the first quarter, ended with 4. I like Sam Bradford. I think he's an upgrade from Bridgewater in their current form. He's light years better than Sean Hill, but he's not Superman. You're going to have to protect him. Your offense is going to have to help him out. It can't average 2.6 yards per rush attempt. They're the worst offensive line in football right now. That's going to have to change.
Yeah, and they've been unable to run the ball in short yardage. Of course, the Vikings will go on the road for a Monday Night Football game, which we'll preview this time next week as we do each and every Monday on the Bet the Board podcast with our big game breakdowns coming to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association and Philadelphia in the Sunday night game against Dallas, one that we'll actually hit on a bit towards the latter end of this podcast and some of the look-ahead lines. One other game, Payne, Chargers-Falcons. We've talked about Atlanta potentially having a hangover in this spot. We knew there were going to be points of plenty. San Diego, extra time to prepare. The Chargers get to 3-4 on the season. But for me and everything that has gone wrong for San Diego, I have to take my hat off to them. At 27-10, I'm not going to lie, sitting on a San Diego ticket +6.5, I thought they were dead and buried. They had shown no ability to stop Atlanta. They go out there and essentially pitch a shutout in that type of game, holding the Falcons to just 3 points in the second half.
Love me some Chargers. Won outright. They outgained their opponent again. Out first down the Falcons again. Lost the turnover battle. Still win straight up on the road. This is a team that we absolutely loved. We have some new life with that over 7 win ticket.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Chargers may have a thing or two to say about their ability to try and impact the division race. A marquee matchup for them as they'll take on Denver for the second time in 3 weeks. Question for you regarding decision making, and you know, we never play Monday morning quarterback in terms of telling coaches how to do their job. Did Coach Quinn make the right decision going for it on 4th and 1 from inside his own territory there in overtime?
I like the decision to go for it. Don't love the play call. When you look at the landscape of that game, they hadn't really been able to stop the Chargers. The Chargers had stopped themselves, whether it was a turnover or Gates dropping an easy pass to, you know, sustain the drive moving forward. But basically, for the most part of that game, the Chargers go up and down the field, 8.2 yards per pass attempt. I think it was the right decision. Don't love the call on the stretch play. The offensive line has been a strength of your team this season with Alex Mack. We've raved about him being the silent MVP this season. So to me, I don't want to take it out of the hands of Matt Ryan or take it out of the hands of potentially getting it to Julio Jones. I don't like just running it straight at a defense who's got 11 guys in the box. That really isn't going to work. So I like the decision simply because you weren't going to get another stop there. You're going to punt them, pin them back, maybe. I like being aggressive. You're an offensive team right now. Your defense in the bottom third in defensive efficiency. I think you hang your hat on what's gotten you to the dance, and that's offense.
And I don't want to take too much away from what appeared to be a minor injury for Atlanta in that second half, but did you feel without Tevin Coleman out there, Atlanta really lost their home run threat in the backfield and the offense didn't quite fire nearly as efficiently as it had throughout the first half with Coleman there as a potential game breaker every time he got his hands on the ball?
Yeah, the two-headed back is an awesome luxury to have. Tevin Coleman, more of your power back. So losing him was big, but a lot of that came from the front four of San Diego getting pressure to Matt Ryan finally, forced some easy misses. I know he missed a wide open Jacob Tammy on a play action. So that front four for San Diego, which we thought would be vastly improved. You pick up Mebane from Seattle in free agency. You draft Bosa early. We knew Corey Legit was you know, one of the better interior linemen. So they're starting to get a lot of pressure. That has become a huge strength, which was a weakness last season.
Bosa been absolutely incredible. I think Pro Football Focus has him as a top three defensive end in limited action. This was a guy that we'd watch at Ohio State look disengaged for extended stretches, but he's been absolutely outstanding. Quick explosion off the ball and really has changed the dynamic of this Chargers defensive line, as you mentioned.
Yeah, he's been awesome. Been a great added addition. I think that's what you hope for when you draft the guy number three overall. A little bit of a diva, a little bit of a pain in the ass, but has gotten things going, really rejuvenated that defensive line, and it's a strength of this team. And we talk about the secondary being decimated with injuries. You have to get pressure. You have to be able to stop the run, help that secondary when the opponent becomes one-dimensional. Looks like Brandon Flowers will be back soon from that concussion, so some added reinforcements for that Chargers secondary moving forward.
And of course, San Diego is on the road to take on Denver Sunday afternoon in one of only two late games. Atlanta will play host to the Green Bay Packers. And for you fantasy folks that may need to hit the waiver wire, I'll tell you right now, I'm paying, you can tell me if I'm nuts, Ty Montgomery has to be must-add territory, knowing how poorly Atlanta defended Melvin Gordon coming out of the backfield. I'd have to think if Green Bay utilizes the same game plan, Montgomery could be massive catching balls for the Packers next Sunday afternoon when they head down south.
Yeah, not the best wide receiver, but when you get him matched up in the backfield against linebackers and safeties, it becomes a tough cover. And we see a Packers offense that is struggling to get things going, having that safety valve there in Ty Montgomery. He's going to rack up your catches if you're in a PPR. Definitely someone you want to look at this point, though. You know, I think everybody's on to him. Maybe last week was the time to go on Montgomery, you know, hoping things materialize, being ahead of the market a little bit. That would have been the key. I think he'll be a hot, hot waiver wire ad this week.
I'm sure there's some thinner leagues out there that a lot of our loyal listeners participate in. So keep tabs there on Ty Montgomery. Hopefully, you know, there is the upside that, who knows, maybe you can get some running back eligibility as well. Payne, there was an issue that I texted you about yesterday, and we talked about this game in great detail. We had Dave Mason on Thursday, and he came out and said it. It was going to be the single largest decision of the day, and maybe even the season. When we get him on Thursday, I'm going to hammer this point home, and I'm interested to get his thoughts. And that, of course, was the Patriots-Steelers matchup. You saw a lot of different opinions in terms of what Ben Roethlisberger actually meant to that number. Landry Jones getting the start. You knew the public was going to bet New England like they do each and every week. They moved to 3-0 against the spread. Since Tom Brady's come back, they've gotten 75% plus of the action. They have a game this weekend where they're laying under a touchdown on the road with revenge against a Bills team that shut them out, which I may go off on that as well. But it's something bigger in the industry that I want to kind of get off my chest. And I know normally you're the guy to rant, but you know, I want to know if I can have the floor here for at least a minute and you can tell me, all right, take a deep breath, or, hey, you know what? I kind of actually agree with your thought process.
No, I mean, I touched on this on Thursday's podcast, but I'll let you finish, so don't mess it up, and maybe I'll have a few thoughts after I give you the floor.
Well, the thing about it, and of course, we talk to people in the industry, both sides of the counter, bettors, odds makers, and have real close relationships because this is a relationship business. As I mentioned, it's not an indictment of one guy out there or two. But if I have to read another bookmaker telling me how big the liability is going to one potential game, and then when things don't go the way they should or the way they're expected to, I was always taught behind the counter, you handicap the effectiveness of your bookmaking before the game even kicks off. You can't play Monday morning quarterback, you can't bitch and moan after the game. But if anyone is surprised by the fact that New England was bet, that New England ends up covering as 27-16, winning 27-16, covering as 7-point favorites, yet they don't move the number. Now, some books did go to 7.5, and maybe they got a little bit of buyback. But if there's not professional money coming in to kind of offset your book, and you're going to trust that so go the masses, so go the asses every time, I don't want to hear you bitch and moan about how you took a loss, how teaser liability, money line liability was there, because I hear it from guys in this city all the time. The same guys that are afraid to take positions on particular numbers. If you're not getting buyback at a price, don't worry about the middle. Go to 7.5. All right, I haven't seen money there. Go to 8. Go to 8.5. I'm not telling you to go all the way to 10, but check the appetite for a particular game, because you know what? I don't want to hear that, oh, we lost money, but the entire industry lost money. Sports betting seems to be the only field where that's acceptable. If I'm the CEO of Coke and I go, well, I lost money this quarter. Well, it's not okay if Pepsi lost money that quarter as well. I should be trying to gain market share. I should be trying to mitigate the damage. And there are certain games where you have opinions, shade the market. We saw it at BetOnline. They were at 4.5 on the Chargers game on Thursday, while the rest of the market was 6, 6.5. Clearly, they were more than comfortable to take money on Atlanta and to go to bat with that particular position. I just don't understand why books every single week want to create that liability on a team like New England, who goes out there and says, we don't give a shit, we're going to cover these numbers. Yeah, they may need a break here or there, but it's the New England Patriots that seems to break them down every single week, inflate the number, take some money from professionals that are looking for number grabs, but don't let the same team beat you, especially the best team in the National Football League. It's completely different, happened somewhere else. It just blows my mind that we have to deal with this every single week and the comments that'll come out. And I'm sure I'm going to see it this morning in the Review Journal and other books, you know, a lot of our colleagues that cover the business, and I'm going to get a good laugh because I have no sympathy for odds makers that didn't try and balance their books on that particular football game.
I think balancing the books is key. There's no doubt about that. Increase that price a little bit. Not only if you get resistance, you get some money into your book to even it out. But I will say I'm not as hard on the bookmakers in this case, simply for the fact if you look at the look-ahead number prior to Big Ben getting injured, it was close to my true number. I know, you know, Westgate used Steelers -1. My true number was Steelers -1.5 with Big Ben. So in that sense, you know, the Patriots closing 7-point favorites to what the look-ahead number was, numerically an 8-point adjustment, and value-wise much more when going through the 3, 4, 6 and touching 7. Maybe an 8-point adjustment was not enough, probably a good starting point. I know we saw it with Aaron Rodgers a few years back. You know, bookmakers could not get the adjustment right. Finally, 3 weeks later, they're like, you know, F this. You know, his value's close to 11 when you think about who his backup was. And I'll say this, what's scary when you're talking about this number is Landry Jones didn't play a horrible game.
No, he was good.
29 for 47, threw for almost 300 yards, had a rating of nearly 77, and you still lose by 11. It goes to show you what Big Ben is worth. You get the early interception out of the way, and I love Phil Simms, by the way. There was a comment he said in that game, and it was to the effect of, you just need to be decisive. You don't need to be right. And I was just dying because I've never heard such, you know, an outlandish comment like that. But Landry Jones was decisive in his interception to Butler. But maybe that propelled things. Maybe that gave him some confidence, you know, throughout the rest of the game. There's no reason, though, he's throwing the ball 47 times and Le'Veon Bell's only getting 21 carries. I think the game plan wasn't great. You asked Landry Jones to probably do too much. There were some big third down throws late in that game. But I thought Landry Jones showed himself well. And so that's extremely scary when you're looking at not having a high enough number. And Landry Jones, to me, playing better than expected. Last time we saw Landry Jones, we were fading him in the preseason against Philadelphia, and he throws 4 interceptions in that game.
Well, I think the book on Landry, as we've seen, he can be a good pocket passer. If you give him time, he's going to survey the field, and most of the time, he'll make good decisions. You put pressure under him, all bets are off, and this guy is an absolute disaster. You saw New England try and do a number of things defensively when it came to scheming. I, much like you, was surprised that Le'Veon Bell didn't play a bigger role in the ground game. I did like how they got him the ball in space coming out of the backfield as a receiver.
31 touches.
Yeah, I mean, we know that's a strength of how things work, but you know, it'll be interesting to see how they handle the Steelers and what odds makers do with them going forward. A bye, we don't know exactly how long Big Ben's out. I guess safe to operate under the assumption it's 4 to 6 weeks. But going back to my other point, too, and I'll let it go after that. Of course, like I said, we'll get Dave Mason's take on Thursday in terms of what the financial implications of that decision actually were to the house. But we know books are not out to balance money. Let me break that myth down first, because we do get that question quite a bit, both on my Twitter feed, Payne, I'm sure you do as well, and Bet the Board. The idea that bookmakers want 50% of the action on Team A and 50% of the action on Team B isn't the case, because if that was, there's just not enough juice to try and collect. If you get $100 million on Team A and $100 million on Team B, then it's great. Then you go out there and collect the juice. But there's certain games decision-wise, certain teams. Vikings-Eagles, a prime example, that you thought, all right, the dog might have some legs here with Philadelphia. There'd been a four-point adjustment for the number. I just paint, and I'm going to say it every week until the Patriots continue to get inflated numbers, win, but maybe don't cover. I don't understand why bookmakers don't adjust for them, and you're going to see a similar situation on Sunday where the liability will be going to New England. Maybe you can make a case for Buffalo. I haven't handicapped the game in great detail. I just don't understand why it's the Patriots every single week as Tom Brady goes on his revenge tour that's going to eviscerate sports books and basically give you a free teaser leg until this team falls flat on its face.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, especially when you evaluate this week. The number clearly says some value in Buffalo, but question marks on Shady McCoy. The revenge game where the Patriots basically got embarrassed at home. I may need seven here in this instance, and it'll be interesting to see how high this goes. But from a number perspective, even though I don't like Buffalo, this number's probably right.
Yeah, and on Monday, well, the game this week, that'll be interesting, because I can tell you right now, just from looking at the opening number at Bet Online, that books are going to be sweating. The Minnesota Vikings, for folks that don't look that far in advance, 5-point favorites on the road against the Chicago Bears. And it's not the Chicago Bears with Jay Cutler, at least we don't think. It's not the Chicago Bears with Brian Hoyer. It's most likely the Chicago Bears with Matt Barkley, who looked ill-equipped to beat a Green Bay defense in limited action on Thursday night.
That was a tough game. Matt Barkley, to put it nicely, was bad. And I think, you know, if we want to touch on that game,
yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy to get your thoughts, and I also wanted to get your take if there are other surprising results, things that disappointed you or interesting, whether it be JJ's second straight rushing game, 200-plus yards, the London game, which turned into an absolute abortion, what's wrong with the Ravens, and maybe give, you know, high marks to Matt Stafford leading yet another fourth-quarter comeback.
It was pretty interesting because the bookmakers didn't adjust on that Thursday night game with Matt Barkley in there. You look at the halftime number, it was the same. It was roughly 7.5 where that game closed pregame. Halfway through the third quarter with, you know, Hoyer, who contributed a 4-for-11 start, and then Barkley, who's probably a CFL quarterback at this point, the Bears are leading 10-6. So I know everyone was like, yo, I like the Packers. There was value there. If you watch the All-22, I watched this again because I wanted to make sure what I thought I saw, I actually saw. The Packers receivers still not getting open. Despite a horrific secondary, some breakdowns in that Chicago secondary. Montgomery, as we alluded to, coming out of the backfield, extremely tough to handle for linebackers. And you see things like this, you know, the three receivers for Green Bay, they all go for 10-plus catches. But if you look at the numbers, and we all talk about box scores all the time, and if you skim them, you'll see Green Bay put up 400 yards of offense, and you see Aaron Rodgers throws for over 325. But then you think to yourself, like, they're back, baby. They're back. Like, you know, this is the offense. Nope, they're not back. You couldn't have fixed it in 3 days. And when you take it one step further, 81 offensive snaps for the Packers. That's good for 5 yards per play. That would rank on a season average 28th in the NFL in net yards per play. You gain 5 yards per play against a defense that gives up 5.3. The average offense averages 5.6 so far. The problem for Chicago, aside from the obvious, their starting quarterback went down. Barkley's so bad, so horrific that he can't pick up first downs. And if you look at the second half numbers, Green Bay possesses it for 23 of 30 minutes, and they basically just wear down Chicago at that point and backdoor their way into a cover.
Yeah, and I think people said, oh, well, you know, how could there have been sharp money on the Bears? Anyone who watched that football game, if Hoyer's out there and can at least keep the Bears' defense on the sidelines to get him rested, there's no doubt in my mind, barring something unusual and obscene, that the Bears are the right side there. They cover. But as you mentioned, again, it's not adjusting at halftime, based on who the personnel that was out on the field. Green Bay goes to the break up 6-3. You see 4.5 pop for the second half. You're right back to the full game number. And I don't think any sharp better or casual better will say, oh, well, there's no real drop-off between Brian Hoyer and Matt Barkley at that point. So every now and again, you do get a chance to put one by the goalie and take advantage of an adjusted halftime line.
It's why the live markets, there is some edge there. The halftime numbers certainly have an edge. It's markets that, you know, pro bettors really, really love to attack. And we saw them attack it. Guys with pregame positions on the Bears came back with the Packers at halftime, quickly adjusting on the fly to what their eyes saw in the first half of that game.
And I actually got a tweet during the game, just happened. I'm not always on Twitter during some of these games if things are going on. But you said, hey, would you keep your Bears bet here? I said, absolutely not. I said, swallow the juice. I said, look to lay it back with Green Bay if you had a pregame position on the Bears, and hopefully they were able to take advice. I guess I was going to get to this question a little later, Payne. It came from some of our social media following. At Jason Ealing writes, on that same vein, do you have any strategies you like to employ for live betting? And I know you and I approach games very differently in the casual bettor, but maybe something that the recreational bettor can do, whether it's missing a game, a number pregame or something along those lines, that you think is a good way to get your feet wet for what can be a new betting thought process for folks that haven't been accustomed to it before.
I'm not a huge live bettor. Do a little more halftime stuff than actual live betting, and there's a number of ways to attack it. But I think the most basic concepts are, if you like a side going into the game, the number isn't conducive to where you have it, and they go down early, you have the potential to enter the market at a better price. So I think that's one way to look at it. If you're also have a, let's just say, for instance, the Tampa Bay San Francisco game, I had no real opinion on it. Actually lean Tampa Bay, know the group when it comes to football, a little more sizzle than substance. So it didn't really scare me off the game. Probably could have taken one before kick and felt comfortable. But at that point, they get down 14-0. It's a perfect time to enter the market on a game you hadn't envisioned entering it, simply because if you'd watched the 49ers the last few weeks, there's just no talent there. They're extremely thin. That defense is just decimated with injuries, and you would think as the game moved forward and progressed, they would start to wear down defensively, and that's exactly what happened. So situations where the basic ones, now there's a lot of situations, but the basic ones where, A, before the game, you like a side, the number isn't quite where you wanted it, and all of a sudden, you know, you get better value in-game, that's a way to attack it. And if you are a guy that, you know, is very good with game theory, is very good with watching games from an unbiased standpoint, and you can then enter the market at just ridiculous prices, those are the two easiest ways to live bet.
And I will give one PSA to kind of build on that. I think live betting can be a great tool once you figure out how to use it and you develop a strategy to suit your handicapping style. But at the same time, be very careful. It can be the crystal meth equivalent for sports bettors. Allow you to get a quick fix, you make rash decisions, and you may not try and do things the way that you need to give it that careful deliberation that you do betting something pre-match. Like you said, Payne, you're a bigger halftime bettor. I think folks, before they should really go full bore into the live betting market, to assess halftime, you at least have 12 to 15 minutes more often than not to figure out a halftime wager. And once you're able to completely understand that and know where opportunity exists, then maybe do a little bit of more live betting just to kind of get your feet under you rather than getting yourself into a potentially dangerous situation.
No question. And I've tried to instill this among the listeners. Being cognizant of what you are, being self-aware. Listen, I'm not going to be, you know, I like pizza too much. I'm an Italian guy. I'm not going to go, you know, be an ab model on television. Like, I'm aware of, you know, the situation. And
yeah,
I think
that's just because you like pizza. That's what's keeping you from being an ab model.
I'm just saying I'm being self-aware here. And I think the key here is for bettors, you know, I've seen questions like, you know, should I be number grabbing? If your numbers are right, the odds of them being right as a recreational bettor probably, you know, not the case 9 out of 10 times. Less is more, I think, when you're a recreational bettor. Pick as few spots as humanly possible. Now, that's not the mindset of the professional bettor. They want to cover the board. They think they have an edge in that regard. They think their numbers are better than bookmakers when it comes to game, you know, 97, 98, 99, and 100. Not the prime time spots, because they have, you know, things covered, in terms of the entire board, they're able to number grab pickoff spots. But I think when it comes to the recreational better, the less times you're laying 11 to 10, the better.
Well, and I think that speaks to the mentality of this podcast as well. I know folks get on our case, well, can't you guys offer more picks? Well, let it be a lesson long term. It's easier to come back from an 0-1 Sunday if we give you one game than if we were to give you 6-7 games. Heaven forbid we had a calamitous weekend. You're 1-6. We're getting texts. We're getting tweets and everything else under the sun telling us how we've buried you. 0-1, you can always come back from. 1-6 gets to be a little bit more delicate. So that's the reason we continue to adhere to the philosophies and why this podcast, as it pertains to picks, won't be changing anytime soon going forward, aside from giving you some of the tools indicating where the numbers are going to go and what you can do with those prices before they potentially get there. Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. Like we say all the time, guys, incomparable NFL analysis, plenty of snark through social media. And he's going to give it to you the way it is each and every time you listen to us on this podcast on Mondays and Wednesdays. But you can follow him on Twitter in the interim. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well on social media at Todd Furman. And, of course, the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Subscribe to the Bet the Board Podcast newsletter at bettheboardpodcast.com. iTunes, SoundCloud, plenty of ways to get this podcast and have it at your fingertips as soon as we go live. And Payne, this is a segment that we do each and every week, as our folks know, with movie reviews. But there's sometimes you go into the theater and there's a movie you're like, yeah, I'm not really sure what to expect. This isn't a movie that I'm really looking forward to. There were a bunch of lean pickings. But this is a movie that I think you texted me, maybe it was back in June, maybe even before that when you saw the trailer and said, this is the movie, we're doing it. The first week it comes out, I'm not listening. I'm not taking no for an answer. And I think a lot of listeners want to know, thumbs up or thumbs down on Ben Affleck's performance in The Accountant?
Listen, I'm not just a one-trick pony here. You know, movies is my second game. I believe I picked the best movie of the year last year. Best supporting actor last year. So this is my specialty here. This is my second great gift to the earth. At this very moment, The Accountant falls into my top three. Tons of movies to come out around the holidays, but top three currently. And I like that the movie was loaded with a secondary cast. It was fantastic. You had John Lithgow. He's in it. If you're a Dexter fan, I believe it was season 4, the Trinity Killer. That was awesome. J.K. Simmons is in it. Won a bunch of awards for Whiplash last year. A lot of familiar faces. John Bernthal, he was, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, Fury, Sicario. So it was a great secondary cast as well, which I loved about this movie.
And what we're going to do, too, for some of the folks that may have missed our movies, you clearly don't have time to go out and see the movie of the week each and every week that we go. Payne and I are going to provide some of our ratings for the stuff that we've seen and or covered on this podcast so far. So we know The Accountant is going to get top grades from Payne, but there's also a bunch of other flicks that may be in different genres that you want to check out. So you can expect a blog on that later in the week with just of our rating system. And Payne, I actually have to agree with you. I thought the movie was excellent. It was entertainment value from start to finish. You know, a couple of plot lines, you're like, eh, you know, it is what it is. But in that kind of movie, I thought they did an excellent job. It's not going to win anything for plot definition or things along those lines. But when you go to the theater, you want to be entertained. As you mentioned, you get a good cast and you get a pretty good plot line. I thought it was definitely one of the more enjoyable two-hour watches. And for the movies that we've seen so far this football season, I'd put it up there with War Dogs for pure entertainment value.
Did I hear some reservation there?
Hold on.
Air
hold
quotes,
on a second. Hold
I actually agree with you.
Wait, whoa.
That's what you just said.
No, I did agree with you.
Yeah, I'm saying, but you made it sound like it was like few and far between. I actually agree with you this time.
I agree with you more often than not on movies. I just am always curious. Like, the more that these companies and production companies put into circulating a trailer and doing all this crap, I always go into the reservation, because if you have to advertise it and publicize it so much, I think that there's something they're trying to hide from you. But this movie was good from start to finish. Kept me glued to my seat for the better part of 2 hours. So two thumbs up, one from you, one from me. And I think anybody who's looking for a good action flick to put your mind on cruise control should go check this out. I mean, does this rank for you at the top of the Ben Affleck movies list? Or, you know, where are we talking, Payne, for The Accountant?
It was very good. It was probably one of the better Ben Affleck movies. And I think I'm a bigger fan of his than most. I kind of, you know, I'm a big proponent of this. I kind of try to instill you with this as well. When he put his career in his own hands. And that's the reason he's kind of surged back onto the scene in recent years. He was kind of in movie star jail, so to speak, after a few stinkers. But The Town, which I loved, kind of put him back on the map, followed it up with Argo, which I loved. He actually produced that one as well. In those two that he starred in kind of rejuvenated this career. I know Gone Girl, probably one you read the book on, which is another one I loved.
I did not read the book, but did love the movie.
Is it called Gone Girl, or is it called like Gone Baby Gone or something like that?
No, it's Gone Girl.
Okay,
it was Gone Girl.
Okay.
But no, you're exactly right. He resurrected his career by taking on the producer and lead actor role. And it's a credit to folks who do that. You take the bull by the horns and let it be a life lesson. If things aren't going the right way, you don't sit there bitch and moan about it. You go out there and try and change your fate to make something else happen.
Did that just come from you? I like that.
Every now and again, you know, you do offer up valuable life advice. And for folks who don't know my story, not to get too personal, you know, there were career issues that led to me leaving being behind the counter while at Caesars Entertainment, kind of trying to do things a little bit differently. And it's a decision I don't regret, despite there being days where you don't know where the next paycheck is going to come from.
There you go. I like this. You're a new man.
You go out there and sometimes you need to get revitalized one way or the other. What movie are we seeing this week, buddy? I don't know if it's a real attractive slate. You got Keeping Up with the Joneses. I saw Jack Reacher, which feels like the 37th Chronicle where Tim Cruise tries to be an FBI agent. I know you're a huge fan of horror movies, so you got Ouija, Origin of Evil. Have you made your executive decision on the flick that we'll be incorporating into next Monday's podcast?
I'm shocked you being a tribe member, you didn't see The Pickle Recipe yet. That has some potential. I saw it was like a 9.2 on IMDb. My Greek, you know, the big fat Greek wedding or whatever, kind of in that comedy loop in that space. I think what we'll do is we'll have some interaction this week. We'll throw it out to the audience. There isn't a slam dunk movie to watch. So later today, I will post our options. Go to Twitter, vote on it. And whatever movie you guys choose is what we'll see. I think that's probably the best. Open it up to the floor again this week.
We can definitely go with listener's choice. They have not led us astray thus far. So hopefully you guys send us into the right area. And of course, we do Movie Review Monday each and every week to kind of break up, I won't say the monotony, but what can be a monotonous process throughout the course of the NFL season. Paying some look-ahead numbers and not a massive slate by any stretch. As we look towards week 8, a lot of teams going on bye. Only two late games in that 4 o'clock Eastern time slot. But let's start with a Thursday night game, one that we'll cover in greater detail on Thursday's podcast. The Titans, current number, you're looking at them as 3.5-point favorites at BetOnline as they play host to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The look-ahead number here was Tennessee -3. I'm a little bit surprised to see it move off the key number, given the Jaguars were a dumpster fire against Oakland, but the Titans weren't much better in their loss against the Colts, where it felt like every professional, individual, and group had laid that number from 2.5, ultimately getting that to close 4.5 against Indy.
If we wanted this to be like a two-hour podcast, both these teams would have been in the disappointing team category. They had opportunities this weekend to change the direction and momentum of the organization. For the Titans, you were a favorite at home against a beat-up Colts team, and you blew the lead late. Not ready for the big moment to take that next step. Jacksonville, similar opportunity. It was just too big of a moment for both of these teams, and they both crapped the bed. This will be an interesting game here. Not really sold on this line movement at this point, do you think?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that this may be a little bit of positioning. I mean, I've said it before that going to the window with a ticket on Blake Bortles is almost like carrying a handgun around and keeping your finger on the trigger, because that's what you need oftentimes to try and put a little salve in that wound. It'll be interesting to see where this number goes. Short rest, a high level of familiarity. We've seen the Titans ill-equipped oftentimes to seize the day and take advantage of the opportunities in front of them, as they did against the Colts. And for all the folks out there that were pissed at us early in the year saying that we don't pronounce the Jaguars' name right, well, they're not at 500, so it's not going to get pronounced correctly until this team actually gets their head out of their asses and starts performing. I will say, glass half full for Jacksonville. The defense has shown me a lot. Jalen Ramsey outstanding in his rookie season, and I think the defense isn't being given enough credit for what it's forced to do to keep them in games while the offense continues to search for an identity.
Thank God. Gus Bradley's calling card is finally working. You know, the defense is what he hangs his hat on. It's finally coming around. This is kind of what happens when you end up getting essentially three first-round draft picks back this year. You get Fowler back from the injury who you drafted last year. You bring in, you know, probably the best secondary guy in Ramsey in this draft. You fall into Miles Jack because there's concerns about what his career is going to be 4 or 5 years down the line. Most coaches don't last that long. Draft a first-round talent, a top-10 talent in the second round, no-brainer. So those three guys really helping the defensive growth.
Well, especially if you're head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, 5 years is a extended stay up there in North Florida. Falcons, Packers, and this number, we're looking at Bet Online right now. The Falcons, a 2.5-point favorite. You do have to lay about $1.25 with no play host to Green Bay. We talked about Atlanta, a very difficult, demanding 2-game road trip, come back home, loss to the Chargers. Now another difficult opponent, what'll be the NFL game of the week. But you were looking at the Falcons as 3-point favorite on a look ahead. Do we think the markets overreacted a bit to the Bears, to the Packers' quote-unquote dominant performance against Chicago, while Atlanta has faced three very difficult opponents in a row?
I certainly would not be running to take the points here.
I think we can leave it at that. Then and maybe revisit this game on Thursday. we don't want to put the milk before the cow. So, all right, that it would echo those same sentiments. A game that's moved a little bit since we got on, and it was a number that I thought might be worth grabbing. Of course, Payne, I didn't have the foresight to do that. Seattle, on the road, you're looking at a current number against New Orleans. The Seahawks, a 3-point favorite. What's -3, -$1.20? You saw some books open Seattle -3.5 this morning. Look ahead number was the Seahawks -4. They go down and take on a Saints team who I think played a lot better than the final score indicated, coming up short at Arrowhead. But the Saints showed me something, especially on defense, at least slowing down Kansas City, ultimately done in by turnovers there. But we see the Seahawks moving on to a key number from 4 down to 3.
Not really impressed with Seattle. I know what the record says. Again, still having issues on the offensive line. That's probably the best unit when you look at the Saints defense. It's their defensive line. They have shown improvements there. The offense is just different at home. You'll have to see if Cam Chancellor's back. If he's not, that's a big loss in the secondary. Drew Brees has looked fantastic. This Saints team, a little bit of a surprise. They've shown vast improvements. The offense set a franchise record, scoring 4 straight opening drive TDs in 4 straight games. So it'll be interesting if they can get out to a lead. Again, not really sold on Seattle. I think they'll be better off long term. They'll make some of those adjustments. Russell Wilson will be healthier. The offense will kind of gel together a little bit. They'll figure out, you know, who their bell cow is moving forward. Is it Christian Michael? Is it Thomas Rawls when he comes back a little bit healthier? Is it going to be CJ Procise getting involved a little bit more in the offense? But right now, this is a Seattle team, especially when you look at that defense, which is the calling card, spent a lot of time on the field Sunday night. That's going to be a factor here.
It should be one of the more intriguing games to try and watch as we figure out what Seattle is. Pete Carroll is going to need to go back to that drawing board and really sort out some of this team's woes offensively. And one of the biggest games of the weekend, Sunday Night Football. Currently, you're looking at the Cowboys, a 4.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Look ahead number here at the Cowboys listed at 5.5, and not through a key number by any stretch of the imagination, essentially the dead zone from 4.5 to 5.5. Philadelphia knows how important this divisional game is. They've been night and day different when they leave the city of brotherly love. But this may be one of the first real tests for Dak Prescott against a living, breathing defense that's going to try and complicate things for him.
Really have no clue on this game as it stands. Haven't done enough work on it. It's a primetime game. We'll be discussing on Thursday's podcast, so I will definitely have something more at that point. Know the Cowboys, the look-ahead line, I believe they opened in the dead zone 5.5, so moved down to 4.5. Not that big of a deal at this point. Carson Wentz will be going on the road. Got a great defensive effort from Philadelphia this last week. Huge special teams play. Wentz is struggling. Let's just put it that way. He's been struggling a little bit the last few weeks. There's now some film on the guy. Not going to go back to saying I thought Wentz was what I envisioned him being before the season. Again, tough worker. He is going to spend time in the film room. Doug Peterson is going to make some adjustments, some readjustments to the opponent's defensive adjustments, but they're going to need more out of Wentz, especially in this road game.
It should be interesting to see two quarterbacks vying for rookie of the year type accolades. As you mentioned, Wentz has been anything but impressive over the last couple weeks, really leaning on that Philadelphia defense to get the win in Sam Bradford's homecoming Dallas, some extra time to prepare. And we have to wonder exactly what the Cowboys' mindset will be, knowing that Tony Romo looms ever so close to taking over the reins under center, or if the Cowboys will continue to ride the Dak train, given all of the momentum we've seen from the rookie quarterback. And last but not least, what we do each and every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast, logically enough, we preview the Monday night football game, which is brought to you by the American Gaming Association. You can follow the American Gaming Association on Twitter at Amer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G, A-S-S-N, for all sorts of great updates. Their website, again, theamericangaming.org. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. You can sign up for live updates. They send all sorts of great information, and we post a lot of their press releases on the Bet the Board podcast website at americangaming.org/about/contact. And for those folks who don't always keep tabs on some of the legalization efforts, some major things taking place a week ago in Congress looking to try and introduce a bill. Should be fascinating to see how some of this momentum picks up when we talk about legalization of sports betting, daily fantasy, and of course, everything gambling related. But Payne, Denver, 7.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Only have to lay $1.05 if you want to back the favorite. We've seen this total at 40.5. This number has gone all over the place. Opened 6-7, depending on the book. Climbed as high as 9. We saw some major resistance in the market this morning. Brock Osweiler, he's going to have his hands full against an ornery Denver defense who's come out and said some pretty high-profile things about how they want to welcome him back. And we use the term welcome a bit facetiously. Denver needs to get in the winning track. Houston, pretty fortunate to get the win last week against Indy. Where do we start to handicap this Monday Night Football showdown?
Well, I think Kubiak being back is huge. Extra time to prep. Two straight losses for Denver. Houston, a come-from-behind win that's likely not a win. So I think there's some value in the market, and I think that's what one specific group saw when they got out early and laid it with Denver. There's an extremely short sample on Brock Osweiler's home-road dichotomy, but for Brock, it's been bad on the road. And I think in general, you know, role players, average players play better at home where they're comfortable. But when you look at how drastic this drop-off has been, Brock completes 63% of his passes at home, 52% on the road. Averages 7.1 yards per pass attempt at home, 4.6 on the road, 83 passer rating at home, 58 on the road. The key here for Houston is going to have to be a heavy dose of Lamar Miller. We know that's where Denver's defense is susceptible. We talked about it all year. They're kind of soft up the middle. You lose your interior lineman in Malik Jackson. You lose your middle linebacker in Danny Trevathan. It's left huge holes. So that's going to be the matchup to watch. A middle-of-the-pack Texans offensive line versus a middle-of-the-pack Denver run-stopping unit. For Houston, the pressure is going to have to be alleviated from Brock's shoulders.
And when we look at this game, Payne, we know Denver's defense is going to show up. They're going to play with a chip on their shoulder against Brock. But when you're laying a touchdown, let alone more than a touchdown in the National Football League, you need a capable offense. And when you go through Denver's point spread so far this season, they were a 6-point favorite against Indianapolis, and that's a game, in my opinion, they shouldn't have covered had it not been for some quirky plays late. Is this number too big, despite the situation, despite the revenge, to back an offense that may be challenged in a game that projects to be relatively low scoring with a total hovering between 40.5 and 41?
Clearly, again, there was some sharp money on Denver from a specific group. But the math guys, and this is why you've seen this tick down a little bit, supports taking a dog, getting more than 7, with a total of 40. To me, though, it would scare me backing Houston here. When you do some of that required reading you alluded to, this Broncos defense sounds extremely confident, almost too confident, as if they know something. And I don't think you're saying the things they're saying if you don't know the outcome of this game. They've faced Brock every single day in practice for a few seasons. They know his tendencies. They know where he likes to go with the ball, what his first reads are. And Brock still has zero chemistry with Hopkins. And you'd have to think Hopkins is negated by one of the two shutdown corners, whoever it is. And aside from that overtime pass to Jalen Strong, Brock really hasn't shown confidence in any of his other receivers. Yes, he has seen this defense. But seeing a defense and going against a defense is much different. And the advantage the defense has is they can change their game plan from week to week. Brock Can't. Brock is who Brock is. His accuracy, his arm strength, his mental toughness, it is what it is. That's not changing. But the Broncos can certainly change a game plan. And I think that's the one thing that's tough to account for here. Is he going to turn it over? Can they move the ball? We know Denver's offense has not been great, struggled to run it lately. But it helps if there's short fields via turnover or just defensive stops. It would scare me just reading what I have read backing Houston here. And the key here is if Houston's going to cover this number, it's very simple. They're going to have Lamar Miller go.
And I think that, you know, it's always a great point when you talk about knowing some groups, their thought process, their methodologies. Some guys just play by the numbers. They're not watching the games. They're not doing their reading. And they're going to trust that over the course of a large enough sample size, they're going to hit enough to turn profit. So in an individual isolated incident, they do things a little bit different than we do, Payne, as it comes to handicapping. I, much like you, would feel very insecure, I guess, for a lack of a better word, to be back in Houston here catching 7.5. I actually, you know, have Denver going as a second leg of a teaser, as I think you do. Not sure I'd be running to the window to lay 7.5, but as we look at it and some of the things you mentioned, can we make a slight case, and it's not, wouldn't be a full investment, don't want to put words in your mouth, that maybe if you can get a team total at 14.5 at a good price to go under, it may make sense on the Texans to think that they struggle to hit double digits?
Yeah, that might be one way to look at it. I think if you can somehow get Denver in a teaser, that makes some sense. I think we've seen under money. We've seen first half under money come into the market. I don't have a bet on this game, but maybe, you know, there's some 41 out there on the total. We've talked about this before, getting it through some keys. Maybe you tease Denver down to -0.5 and you tease the total up, get it through the 43, the 44, the 47, and you're going under 48. Maybe that's a correlated option if you're going Denver and under. That's something if, again, you're looking for, you know, a movie and popcorn bet. For me, don't have a single thing on this game. I think there was some teaser legs that you could have included Denver in. I'm not sure where the Thursday night game goes from here. I would think some money probably eventually comes in on Jacksonville. Maybe you're pairing it with that leg. I really don't like it. I don't have a bet on this game. I'm going to be looking for some type of prop bet on this game. I'm going to be working probably the rest of the game, rest of the day on this game. But for me, nothing at this point.
20.5, as you mentioned, for a first half number, 20.5 under -120 at BetOnline. And like we tell you, some games are meant to be bet. Some games are better to be watched.
That gets scary too, right? You know,
what'd you say?
Potentially some turnovers there. We've seen.
Yeah, Denver, I mean, if we worry about short field
issues, we've seen Brock have some turnover issues with short fields. That'd be the only way that game goes over. Similar to Vikings-Eagles, the only prayer that game had of going over were quarterbacks making mistakes, setting up short fields, or the potential for some special team score, which the game had, game featured those, but it was just such a huge edge going under there. Those special team scores, those short fields didn't really hinder the total.
Well, what helped with the Eagles total, as you mentioned, was turnovers that came inside the green zone and the other team subsequently turning the ball over again in the end zone, because it could have made things much more delicate knowing how strong groups were on the under both first half and full game there. But like we say, Payne, sometimes games are meant to be bet. Sometimes they're meant to be watched. Some present opportunities for a halftime. So no official recommendation when it comes to an investment. But Payne, before we close up shop, and I know, you know, you stopped doing most of your baseball work in the middle of July, I guess we'd be remiss to at least hit on the World Series and what we've seen, where the Cubs are a $2 or north of $2 right now at BetOnline favorite over the Indians, take back +175. Saw an interesting stat over the weekend. The team that clinches second has won 9 out of 10 last World Series. Maybe it's about momentum. Maybe it's about, you know, having that regular rest. Both teams will come into this. Do we have any thoughts on history being made for one side or another, whether it's the lovable losers hailing from Chicago, breaking 100-plus-year drought, or Believeland getting their second major championship in a few short months?
The momentum is real. Obviously, you want to be in the box facing live pitchers, so that extended time off is something that definitely hinders a team with time off. We've seen it all the time, whether it's the start of the season. And yes, weather plays a role, not as hot, but pitchers have the advantage. Coming out of the All-Star break, we've seen pitchers have an advantage. They're usually on their normal rest, where hitters just haven't seen live action. So that scares me a little bit from a Cleveland perspective. Shocked, you know, a pretty public sports book opened this series price -150 on the Cubs. We're holding a Cleveland future at 30-1. We loved this team, went over 85.5 wins. Definitely going to be buying some back. Already bought some back at, you know, a little better price tag. I'm not doing anything past that hedging. Game one definitely sparks my interest a little bit. Have they announced a game one starter for the Cubs yet?
The Cubs have not yet announced a game one starter, of course.
Potentially thinking about going with the lefty.
Yeah, I mean, we sit here and record. It's 11 o'clock on the East Coast, 8 a.m. out here Pacific time. So depending on when you listen to it, that may be null and void. But by all intents and purposes and doing some reading, I would have to think that it's John Lester.
Okay.
Going to get the nod in game one against Corey Kluber. Probably a game much more important to the Indians, knowing how depleted that pitching staff is. And assuming those two guys are on the bump, I think we'll see a total at 7, maybe shaded to the under. And of course, pending umpires, pending weather. But we're looking at most likely opening right around a pick'em.
Yeah, so we know Cleveland in the last few seasons have struggled with southpaws. Kluber, this is the must-win game. Looks like the slider is in good form. As you alluded to, pending umpire, pending weather. It has been humid there in Cleveland, so that's something you definitely want to look out for. But it'll be interesting if this opens 7. I would think with the right umpire and some decent weather, you'll see some under money come in.
And Jason Kipnis gets the All-Idiot Award. He's dealing with a sore ankle that was suffered celebrating the ALCS victory. I'll never understand what these professional athletes do. You have one job. It's to stay healthy and stay on the field. But I could go on about that for hours. And this is a football-first podcast. So glad we got a little bit of baseball in pain. I know folks will be glued to their TV sets being from Chicago. None of my friends and or family really want to talk to me because they know about that Indians investment. So I told them that the Indians will put food on the table. My mom has threatened no home-cooked meals if I root against the Indians, but you know, might be able to buy a few home-cooked meals if Cleveland's able to do the unthinkable and ultimately win the World Series.
Regardless of your baseball ties and affiliations, I am shocked your mother still likes you at this point anyways.
Well, I mean, there's a number of other reasons. She's had many a chance over the course of 34 years not to like me, but true unconditional love perseveres through all. Thankfully, that's what we have on this podcast, Payne. It keeps you and I going strong 2.5 years into the process.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just wrap this up. BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Go there. Pick up a t-shirt. It's a $20 t-shirt. It's simply a thank you to us for providing winning information. If you've ever won a bet, just pick up a t-shirt. Do us another favor. Just tell a friend about it. That's all it takes. One friend, one family member to help grow this podcast. And if you see us tweet out the podcast, just do us a favor again. Help us distribute this with a simple retweet. That's all we're asking you for, our time and information.
And the best part about if they buy a t-shirt, we can get second generation shirts in. Those first half undershirts that people have been clamoring for, the logo t-shirts. You know, we want to try it out. We're not t-shirt vendors here. We're not trying to build an empire. Shows us a little bit of appreciation. That way you guys can support the podcast. We thank everything that you guys do as listeners each and every week. So if we came out a little bit harsh on you for not clicking on that blog to get the winner, it's all comes from a place of tough love. So for the incomparable Payne Insider, follow him on social media at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And, of course, you can follow our Thursday weekly guest, Dave Mason, at Dave Mason BOL. And make sure you are following the podcast Twitter account, at BetTheBoardPod. We'll be right back here with you on Thursday as we break down all the NFL Week 8 action, highlighted by that barn burner, Jacksonville against Tennessee on Thursday Night Football, provided by the American Gaming Association. Best of luck with Houston and Denver. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.